Good afternoon. You're listening to Gambling with an Edge. Now here are your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Jack Allweil, an author of a new book called Make Better Bets. Jack Allweil, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. We're going to talk primarily about betting on soccer, which is not, it's within the general scope of what we do, but we haven't had a lot of soccer bettors. So, tell us to start with, what is your book all about?
The book is about my attempt to bet the 2018 FIFA World Cup that was hosted in Russia with an Excel model that I created. And a lot of the framework is a lot of the stuff I learned as an actuary. So a lot of, it's written in VBA, which is the programming language used to automate mundane tasks in Excel. And yeah, that's what it's about.
So you bet, 3 years ago, in general, how much work was that? How did that go?
It was a couple hundred hours, I would say. I actually recorded over 2,000 games of international competitions. I started out actually going back as far as 04, but then I quickly realized they had changed the FIFA ranking methodology after the 06 World Cup, so it wasn't really apples to apples, so I only included things after the 06 World Cup. But it was a lot of data gathering, and it basically started from some books I had read by Professor Szymanski and Simon Cooper. They wrote, a couple books, Soccernomics and Money in Soccer. And they had done a study to see that they were trying to answer the question, what countries use their resources the best? So they were looking at variables like GDP per capita, population size, and then international appearances. And they were kind of just using those to try to predict goal differential. And then they would look to see what countries outperformed their predicted goal differential. And then I kind of thought that would be cool if you could just map the goal differentials into probabilities of a win, loss, or draw. And that's kind of how I formulated the model. And I ended up using the FIFA rankings and home field advantages variables. I would have loved to have used salaries, but I just didn't have enough time to get all that data.
So your model had really very few variables. And, I'm surprised that it didn't seem like there were any individual player data variables other than their salary. You know, in terms of, you know, amount of minutes they handle the ball. But now in World Cup, they're not playing with their normal team, right? So did you think that would, that data would not necessarily, apply?
So I was not able to get player salary data. I was only using the FIFA rankings, and the FIFA rankings are for the countries themselves. So I guess the thought or the thought behind that was, better teams have better FIFA ranking, and the higher the difference between the two teams playing each other, for their FIFA rankings, you would think that would correspond to a higher predicted goal differential, which would then map into a higher probability of a win. One thing, But you're right. The players playing for their international teams, they have club teams that they play with all year long. And then, these big international tournaments only occur 2 to 4 years. So.
Which made it kind of an odd choice to, go after, right? Like, if your model's really good, you only get to use it every 4 years, right?
Absolutely. I mean, part of it was I was still, I just finished my actuarial exams. So this modeling had to fit in a couple months after I was done with an exam and I had time to put it together. So, I mean, going forward and now that I'm done with the exams, I look to do more modeling and I hope to acquire salary data and hopefully I would think there's less action on some of these smaller leagues, and I could maybe like the Turkish league or one of these smaller leagues and maybe do more betting in one of those leagues, and I'd be able to do it every week. But, you know, for a start and just to build the framework, I thought it was a good use of my time, and it was a fun passion project.
So what about, you spent a couple thousand hours doing this?
I'd say a couple hundred, I'd say, not thousands of hours.
Merely a couple hundred hours relatively small amount of money bet.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun doing it. So a lot of it was just pleasure, passion project. It was, you know, blending my love for soccer and, I guess, macro writing in Excel.
Well, also, though, if you have model building skills, this was a good way to kind of flex those muscles and see if this is something you could do going forward where you might be able to have a much bigger edge or at least be able, you know, to play in the, as you say, be able to bet every week where you could actually have something that could be a real moneymaker.
Yeah. I mean, there were clearly some limitations in my, like, data. Like for instance, a lot of the cool thing about the World Cup is you get to see countries play each other that don't normally play each other. So, like, a European and a South American team, like, this is the only time they're really going to play each other. So a lot of the data, I was more confident in the World Cup groups where there was – and there was 14 European teams in the eight groups. So the groups that had two European teams, I was a little more confident because, I mean, there's just not a lot of data on, you know, intercontinental play. So that was definitely a limitation of this modeling.
How much of your data that you collected for – the 2018 will be relevant for the 2022 event, assuming that's when the next one is.
Yeah, the next World Cup's in November of 2022. I mean, I'm going to try to collect more player salary data, and a lot of the studies show how predictive it is in a lot of these other leagues. And it's something I think as Americans, we don't really think about a lot just because a lot of our sports have salary caps, but in like Europe and elsewhere, that those caps don't exist by and large, and those salaries can be very predictive. But it was actually hard. It's hard to get some of the countries' players' salary data, like Poland. Some countries it's hard to get.
What about other data, like things like how many minutes a player spends with the ball, how many shots they take, how many assists they get, those kinds of things?
You know, that's getting very, I mean, I want to make it manageable, I guess. That would be, I mean, it sounds cool in theory, and I would love to explore it. The things I'm looking at more now are kind of modeling the occurrences of red cards. For example, this last European Championships, there were six games with red cards. And it was kind of, it felt pretty random, and it wasn't always occurring to the team that was the underdog, because you would think the teams that are better are a little more disciplined. But all six games where there were red cards, the team lost. So I'm thinking about incorporating red cards, player salaries, and doing more work on home field advantage, but I don't know how much help that's going to be for Qatar this year.
I mean, another thing.
So,
go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say another thing to look at would be, for example, if the United States is going to play Iraq, the line is going to be skewed because all the money is going to go on the United States, just because, you know, the normal bettors are, you know,
absolutely,
you know,
yes.
So the kind of, it seems like that would be a factor to take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and another big one that was incorporated in the 2018 World Cup was the video assistance referee. They call it VAR. It was the first time they had used this video assistance to do penalty checks inside the penalty box that had never been used before at a major tournament, and that seemed pretty influential. So that's another variable I would like to look at more. There's a lot to look at. And some of the bets we really liked going into the World Cup, we altered a little bit just on injuries. For instance, we really liked Egypt to get out of their group. And it ended up being I think it was a month before the World Cup was supposed to start, in the Champions League final, Mohamed Salah separated his shoulder against Real Madrid. And that, for instance, caused us to lower our bet on Egypt. So we definitely were looking at the injury reports. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of fun.
So what did you learn about getting your bets down? Because it's all good theory, but you got to get bets down. And today you can get bets down easier than you could in 2018, and presumably next year even more so.
When you say bets down, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, for example, you were planning to use Bovada to make a lot of your bets.
Ah.
So we'll let you rant about that, but you also went to various, to actually place money on the bets. And, there's a limited number of places you can do this.
Yeah. So I ended up, I won't get into the Bovada stuff, but I ended up flying to Philly and then driving to Dover Downs to place these basically the week before the World Cup started. Now my brother lives in Alabama now, so he's been able to place bets for me, and the access has been getting a little better. So I still can't, I mean, last I checked, I can't place bets in North Carolina. So at least on my phone.
But they're open in a lot of states. So, do you expect easier to make bets in 22 than it was in 18?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can. I am basically, just call up my brother and have him place them, or, it's basically how we've been doing it.
So, you ended up in 2018, you ended up, in the negative, which mm-hmm. we all understand that really, you know, is just variance. But do you think, how many bets did you actually place? And do you think that you actually had an edge and got unlucky, or is that unclear to you?
Well, I'll say I did think we had a slight edge. I mean, I did a lot of regression analysis, and I felt more comfortable on the groups where there were two European teams, just because we had more data on that. And the analysis I had done seemed to be a little more comfortable with the European matchups. There's a lot more variation in places outside of Europe. And I mean, my gut tells me it has to do with a lot of the traveling. In South America, you're traveling long distances to go play other countries. You probably don't have a lot of your own fans at the games. And also, a lot of those countries have very unique environments, and oftentimes they're at high altitudes. And actually, a couple of the South American countries, they actually banned them hosting games in certain cities because of the altitude. It was dramatically affecting the performance of the players. So it's kind of iffy on how big or how much we should have really weighted those results. So, but there was definitely, I mean, part of writing this book was a post analysis on, you know, did we actually just get unlucky, or was our allocation kind of shoddy? And I thought a couple of the groups looked fairly similar, and we kind of, and this might have been our own biases getting in the way, but we might have put too much on certain groups.
In the groups you're talking about, these are eight different groups of four different teams, at least to start out. And there are times that you bet on all four of the teams in a particular group. When I read that, it sounded like betting on the pass and the don't pass on the same roll of the dice. So how can that be a good strategy to bet all sides on a zero sum thing where the house takes a rake?
So, it kind of goes to, well, some of, they're clearly correlated. And in each group of four, the top two get out. So it's not like if one gets out, all three don't get out. It's the top two get out.
So were you making parlays where you were making combinations of, or,
no.
Because I missed that. How were you betting on all four teams at the same time?
I mean, sometimes we would just do little, like for example, we would do like Germany not to get out of the group, but with Sweden and Mexico also to get out of the group. So like in that Mexico, Sweden, Germany and South Korea group, we actually bet on our models were showing that Sweden and Mexico had a higher than 50% chance of getting out. And it was basically, it was over, I think it was like plus 115 and plus 110 for both of them. So we ended up betting both of them and Germany not to get out a little bit because the, I mean, yeah, so, but it is one of those things like if we win,
he's not betting the same way on the teams, Bob. He's betting opposite ways.
Well, but he has a small hedge on some of the long shots too.
They're definitely, yeah. I mean, we looked at different levels. So I mean, I think we ended up placing like 35 bets. The vast majority were on bets either teams getting out of the group or not getting out of the group. And then I think we put like five very little bets on, well, the bigger bets were Brazil and France to win it all. And then there was, we saw like three kind of value picks in Switzerland, Portugal, and, Poland, I think, to win it all. So we put little ones on those guys.
Could you parlay those? Could you parlay, for example, Brazil to get out and parlay that with somebody else not to get out?
That I'm not sure of. But definitely would want to look into that. I don't think that was available the last
go
around.
I mean, probably not. I mean, if they're sharp at all, it wouldn't be. But
do all the books have the same lines? In other words, if you got down at DraftKings, would that be the same lines as they have at at BetMGM or Caesars or whatever? So, like, was there any line shopping available?
The only line shopping – well, I mean, I looked at Bovada originally, and then the only place I could find that even had these types of bets was – Dover Downs, and that's why I went there. So that was the only type of shopping I did.
Oh, wow. So most of the places were not taking these bets on World Cup? That's surprising.
No. Well, the thing was, I guess Vegas, I mean, a lot of places in Vegas probably were doing it, but Dover Downs is closer to me. I'm living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and over the, I couldn't get verification that they actually existed in a lot of these. I mean, I have to imagine these bets were available in Vegas, but I just couldn't get verification. And, I mean, they won't tell you over the phone what's available. And,
oh yeah, there are plenty of websites where you can look and they'll tell you what all the Vegas lines are. So, but I understand you were very new to gambling. This, I guess, was your first gambling venture. So,
yeah, I'm definitely a noob.
Yeah. So that became clear, but you know, it just, to me, your background, as an actuary, you have the skills to, be able, and you're thinking in the right way, you know, to be able to make money at gambling eventually, but, so was Dover Downs the only casino in the state, or was it,
I think it came about. My dad, I think, called me like the night before I booked the ticket. He said he heard or he saw it in a paper that Dover Downs was having World Cup betting. And that was a big deal, I guess. And when I heard that, I booked the ticket.
So today, though, there are many states with lots of books in them. You can bet online, but lots of books in them, whether it's Colorado or Arizona or certainly Nevada or
Pennsylvania,
New Jersey, Pennsylvania. So online shopping in general in sports betting is a key part of it. If you're always betting into one book, then it's a really tough game. If you have a choice of four or five and there's some variance, it's still a tough game, but it's an easier game. So it would seem like if you're doing this in 8 months or whatever that is, you should strongly look into taking up residence in Colorado for however many weeks it is. Would that be an option for you?
I mean, you know, my wife thought I was so unbearable these last big soccer tournaments where I bet that I think I'm going to be either banished or we need some space. So I think it is likely I will be seeking out a place to hang out during the World Cup.
Yeah, and if it goes badly, there's legal grass in Colorado. So so that always would be good. Now, a lot of this started when you lost your job 5 years ago. How did that change your life?
So I moved to Charlotte in 2015. I was having a hard time finding my stride socially and had trouble balancing work, socializing, studying, and my work product went down. I was a little depressed with a couple failed attempts at actuarial exams. I unfortunately lost my job, and I decided to take what I called my roots trip. And this is where I went to Europe to see the cities where my grandparents originated from. And when I was growing up, I was always playing soccer and doing math problems. I did not like reading, but for some reason on this trip, I started reading a ton. And it was really after visiting the Auschwitz concentration camp, I became very curious in a lot of World War II, and I bought some books there, and that morphed into reading on a lot of personal finance and real estate, and I just kept reading a lot of soccer books. And that's really how this model came to be, and that's how I got in touch with Professor Szymanski at the University of Michigan, and he kind of set me up with some of the data he used, and it just got me down the rabbit hole.
So you passed your actuarial exam. So are you now working as an actuary?
I mean, I've been working as an actuary since 2013. But I just like last month passed my last exam, and my first exam I took in 2010. So a very long road.
And do you want to be working? Do you want to continue that? Or do you have other plans?
I mean, right now it's pretty good. Now that I don't have to study, it feels pretty chill, and I can still do a lot of my passion projects on the side and have a pretty robust life with my passion projects and my traditional income. So for right now, it's pretty good.
There's this lady named Elena who it's discussed quite a bit in the book. Tell us a little about her.
So, my wife, Elena, I also met her on my roots trip, unbelievably. And I got into, I think I actually, I met her on a dating app after also going to Auschwitz. And when I flew into Budapest, I actually rented a car and drove to Vienna. where she lives, and she thought I was kind of creepy at first because I couldn't find a parking spot, and I was asking her to just, you know, hop in the car and show me around, but I guess that came off as creepy. So but years later we are now married, and she lives with me in Charlotte, North Carolina. So pretty cool story.
And those cities are about 2 hours apart. How close are they?
Budapest and Vienna were like, I think two or three hours, something like that. Yeah, unfortunately, I remember I booked a car, or I rented a car, and it wasn't clear to me that it wasn't unlimited miles. So I got a nasty surprise when I returned the car in Budapest that time.
Ouch.
But Elena was worth it. So
Elena was worth it. Yeah.
Now, do you have any interest in – there's soccer betting all the time. You can bet in the Premier League regularly at lots of places. Do you have any interest in that? Is your modeling suitable for that?
Absolutely. I mean, one of Szymanski's projects or studies showed that basically the ending table for the English Premier League is like 90% illustrated just by looking at the player salaries. I mean, it doesn't say a whole lot about the coaches, but I definitely – and those salaries are easy to get. So I would probably record the salaries and then use the same framework I used for this World Cup model to predict a goal differential and then map that into a win-loss tie probability. And absolutely, it could absolutely be used.
And you can get those bets down.
Yeah.
In lots of places.
Lots of places.
But you haven't done that yet.
No. Not yet.
What's the next big thing you'll be betting on, or is it going to be World Cup in November?
I think it will be the World Cup in November. But over the summer, after this Premier League's over, I do want to start compiling data. I think I'll start with the Premier League, and I think I'd like to do some other league where there's probably not as much action, and maybe I can find more of an edge, something that's not bet as much, but I haven't quite identified what I want to study or research yet. But I think I like watching the Premier League a lot, and I'm an Arsenal fan, so could be like a double whammy by doing research on that.
That might be a bad thing to actually be a fan, right? Like if you don't care at all, maybe.
Probably. I would probably have a rule I cannot bet on any game where Arsenal is participating. That's also why I don't do fantasy soccer in the same light.
I'm not a sports bettor, but I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and every year they find another way to break my heart. So, we're going to take a break now for commercials, and we're going to be coming back talking to Jack Altweil and about more that's in his book. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The game of the month is $500,000 spin to win promotion. Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. to 3 a.m., earn 2,000 video poker points or 500 slot points and spin a virtual wheel at your machine. There's limits of 4 spins per day. The points awarded range between $2,500 worth $7.50 to $100,000 worth $300. The free slot play awarded ranges from $5 to $100. I've been announcing that the average is about $12 per spin. And for me this year, that is higher than the median, lower than the mean. I hit a 100,000 point one, which was $300. And this is the first one I've ever hit there. And through earlier years, I probably recorded 600 to 700 spins. And this is the first time I've gotten one that big. And there's only 32 spins for the entire promotion. And when you hit one for 32 for $300, that really kind of increases your mean quite a bit. What also seems to happen is it varies from week to week. I think, not sure, Well, I know that the South Point has a philosophy of if they offer a $500,000 giveaway, that they are going to give away at least that much. If they only have given away $400,000, they will find a way to up things. So the first week, the average was higher than $12 by quite a bit. And I'm guessing they gave away more than, $125,000, which is one fourth of the $500,000 promise. So subsequent weeks, it's been a little lower than that. Unfortunately, there's no data published as to how that's going. And so to take advantage of it, you don't know until later this week wasn't so good. It's just, it is what it is, and you don't know until you find out. Also, this week I've had my health issues and have not hit every time. So usually I hit it every time it's available, but not this year.
Hey guys, this is Colin from BlackjackApprenticeship.com, and if you're serious about card counting, I'd encourage you to check out the Blackjack Apprenticeship membership. It has the training tools you'll need to beat the game, like our comprehensive video course and our training suite, so you can learn each skill and virtually test yourself before ever stepping foot in a casino. It also includes the tools you'll need to succeed, like our pro betting software, casino database, results tracking software, and access to a community of like-minded advantage players to network with in our members forum and chat room software. You can find out more at blackjackapprenticeship.com.
VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Magic Deal Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where periodically prior to the deal, you receive one, two, or three Magic Deal cards. These are like wild cards, except they're determined after all the other cards are dealt, and they must take the value of a real card, which means you cannot have five of a kind in a game like Double Double Bonus. The frequency of the Magic Deal cards depends on the games. On games where two pair receives even money, these games generally have big payouts for four aces, you get relatively few Magic Deal cards. On games where two pair pays double money, like Jacks or Better or Bonus Poker, you get a lot more Magic Deal cards because on average, the Magic Deal cards do not help you as much in those games. Playing Magic Deal appropriately, it adds about 0.25% to the value of the base game. All right, we are talking with Jack Allwile about his book, Make Better Bets. Make Better Bets is the name of a podcast with somebody. How did you come up with the name, or how did you choose that name?
It's a good question. I actually first wanted it to be the bet is round. There's a famous soccer quote. It doesn't really make sense to me, but
the ball is round.
The ball, the quote is the ball is round. Anything can happen, but you would think, you know, a soccer ball is, you know, a pretty good shape. You would think the bounce isn't really that unpredictable, but there was, I don't know if it was a coach or a player, but yeah, he said, you know, anything can happen. The ball is round. And I thought it would be clever to do the bet is round, but I found out nobody really knew what that was. And it only really made me chuckle, not anyone else. So I basically just posted like a poll online of I think I listed like five different names, and I kind of just I picked the most popular one, and that ended up being Make Better Bets.
Well, it does seem like an appropriate name, although it didn't make me chuckle. So in the next 10 months, you're doing this all again. Are you planning to make Better Bets Volume 2 out of this journey?
I think I will be a little more cognizant on the lead up and probably try to, like you said, do a little more shopping before. And I hope to be keeping some notes, and I hope to put another volume together, I think. Hopefully the result is better this time.
Well, also you had some questions in the book about the way you allocated your bets. And were you familiar with the Kelly criteria, and were you using Kelly to make your bets, and how are you going to change that moving forward?
Yeah, so like I said, I wasn't new, but I had not heard of Kelly betting. I have since then been introduced to it and looked into it, but I was kind of doing something similar. Like, I was just looking, you know, what's the probability I'm predicting versus what does the odd translate into? So if they're offering 4-1, on something, they're kind of implicitly saying there's a 20% chance of something happening. And if I have, let's say Iceland getting out at 25%, I would say, okay, so that's a positive expected value. And I would, you know, mark that as a good bet. And, but at the end of the day, I only have it happening 25% of the time. So if there was, another, I guess, variance of 5%, but another bet I thought was going to happen 75% of the time, I was going to put more on that higher likelihood bet. But I kind of had a sliding scale. So I guess similar to it, but at the same time, Kelly betting, from what I can tell, it's like when you're doing the same thing over and over again, whereas this is, we get one shot at it.
Well, but that doesn't matter. So, expected value is expected value, right? And variance is variance.
Right.
Kelly incorporates the variance into it, but you know, you're basically sizing your bets based on the amount of your edge and the amount of the variance. So,
Yeah, I kind of had, I mean, it wasn't, I wasn't super structured, and that's the part I'll take going forward. I'll be a little more structured in what is the variance in our expected value and the odds given, and I'll try to be a little more precise on how I'm allocating the money.
So when you bet before, Elena was not your wife. So she had very little say as to how you spent your money. Now she is your wife, and she thinks she should have, I'm guessing, she thinks she should have a say as to how this works. How do you see that going this year?
So, well, I was able to put so much money away because I house hacked for years. So I bought a house and rented out the room. So I had a lot of money saved up. Now, since she's moved here, we have kicked the roommates out. I gotta do this. It's, I don't see it as, you know, strictly gambling. I need to, you know, pursue this project, and, hopefully she'll understand. And she did the last Euros a little bit. So, I still plan on doing it. and we ended up, getting some more rental property, so hopefully that eases her mind.
Well, it's a subject that a lot of us have dealt with, some more successfully than others. Actually none more successfully, several less successfully than others.
I've said often on the show, one of the reasons I married my wife was she understood that professional gambling was a job. And that was, very rare to find, a woman who really understood that. But you're in a different spot because you have a regular job. So you have the stability. But a lot of women, yeah, they just think you're going to be a degenerate and lose all your money. But sounds like you're in a good spot, so you don't have to worry about that.
Famous last words. We'll see what his next book says on that.
Yeah.
If you're doing other things, you have a podcast.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
So it was kind of a product of COVID. You know, everyone's locked up inside. My brother was living in Nashville. And we wanted, another just project to do together. So we started the Brothers on Books podcast. We read a lot of books and discuss them. They're mostly nonfiction. And we've been doing it for a little over a year now. I think we have like 26 episodes. We release every other week, and we're starting to get some authors to come on too now. So it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, nice.
I think the book probably that's most related to gambling, I would say, was probably Taleb's Black Swan. I thought that was a great book.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to get him for the show, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think he would be a curmudgeon on the air.
Well, he certainly is on Twitter.
Well, good. So that sounds like he is definitely going to have a good recommended for us, just without having to think about it too much. All right. Now, if people want to get in touch with you, do you want them to get in touch with us first, or do you want to announce an email address? How would you like to do this?
Or are you on Twitter or social media? You know,
I try not to go on a lot of the social. I mean, I'm fairly active on LinkedIn, I guess, and I'm the only Jack Allwile there. So I guess if they want to contact me, they can go there or through you guys.
Okay. We will should anybody want to get in touch with you, we'll be happy to forward their emails to you. All right. Thank you very much. Is this book available through your website or through Amazon or everywhere?
Through Amazon right now.
We'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. So, as we alluded, the end of our show is the recommended section. So, Richard, do you have a recommended for our audience?
Yeah, I was just reminded of this book that I really loved, called Cryptonomicon, and it's by Neil Stephenson, and it came out in 2002, and it really predicted kind of the whole cryptocurrency explosion. But the book is a novel, and it follows two stories, a modern-day guy who is searching for a sunken ship of Nazi gold, and while pursuing cryptocurrency, developing cryptocurrency, and his grandfather, who is one of the inventors of the computer and was a code breaker during World War II, and also has a tie into this ship with the Nazi gold. So, you know, as I say, it's just really well written and very prescient. And Neil Stephenson is the guy who came up with the term cyberpunk. He kind of writes in the technology area fairly often. So anyway, if that sounds at all interesting to you, check it out, Cryptonomicon.
But it sounds fascinating to me. I although guessing, you know, 20 years ago what crypto would be like today has to be not extremely highly correlated, or is it?
Oh, he's pretty accurate, yeah. Yeah. I mean, mainly, you know, in the book he's dealing with how people want an unregulated currency and the ability to not have governments, you know, looking into what they're doing with their money. And so, of course, there are government forces fighting very hard against that, trying to prevent it from happening.
Well, in the novel and, of course, in today's world.
Yes. Yeah. As I say, he was very prescient.
Very good. My recommendation is the app Libby, L-I-B-B-Y. It is through the public library systems all over the country, and it's free. And if you have a library card, you can download a book or an audio book to your iPhone, to your iPad, to your laptop, whatever. If you have more than one library card, then you can download them all to various systems. So, like, I have my Las Vegas library card and my Henderson library card. They're both linked up, and next time I'm in North Las Vegas, they have their own system. And so I may sign up for the Boulder City system, which it can be if you want a particular book to download that it's more available at one place than the other. But it is free, and you can download it. I'm driving to Phoenix, Arizona, and looking forward to listening to an audiobook along the way. And you have an interesting. It's the reason I'm going to Arizona is totally separate, but it kind of relates to the show because Richard and I are both competing in a storytelling event. The closest one to us is Arizona, which is about a 4-hour drive or so, 5 hours. And so right in Vegas, we're neighbors, but we're driving considerable distance to compete against each other. And, Richard is the better storyteller, but I like my story this time, so I think I have a fighting chance. We shall see.
Well, also, this is the moth where you have to throw your name in the hat, so there's no guarantee that either or both of us are going to be called. So, but, you know, I've been to many moth events, and it's always a fun evening, even if you don't get called.
Yeah, and for me, Richard is easier to beat if he doesn't get called. So that's just my strategy. But I'm looking forward to it, and should be fun. I've been to some virtual moth events during the pandemic, but I've never been to a live one. So I'm actually very much looking forward to that. All right, Jack.
I just will add that we'll report back next week as to what happened. Because I'm sure inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, and Richard ought to be over losing to me by that time.
Yes,
I'm guessing he will have
time. A bitter pill to swallow, but I will try hard.
In truth, I want to win, and if Richard ends up winning, I will be tickled pink. So either one of us winning will please me a lot. Me personally doing it will please me a bit more, but it'll be a good day. Actually, if we put on a good performance, that'll be a good day. So, Jack Alwa, sound like you have 26 recommendations you could give us. I'm hoping you limit it to one or two. Well, you've already thrown away the Black Swan, so that puts you down to 25.
Yeah.
And you're welcome to do one or two.
Yeah, I'll keep the kind of gambling theme alive, and there's – The book Wall Street Bets by Jamie Rogozinski. So Jamie is the one that actually started the Reddit group Wall Street Bets, and Wall Street Bets became, I guess, most famous during that GameStop short squeeze. And he does a good job painting a picture of what has kind of caused the craze that is Wall Street Bets and kind of what has contributed to that community being built in the way it is and just how sharing they are, and how reckless they are at times. So it's a very entertaining story.
I didn't know he had written a book. So, that's great. Actually, I will pick that up.
Huh. Yeah. It's a short read, very entertaining. At first, I kind of thought he was just trying to, cash in on the fame that is Wall Street Bets, but I thought he did it was a great book. Very, he didn't even really mention the GameStop stuff. So he kind of, yeah, I'll let you guys read it, but very entertaining.
Huh. Very good. So thank you, Jack Alwa. Wish you success on your book and your World Cup betting this year and keeping your marriage alive during this both events. And thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.